Today's shiur is Masechta Mida Daf Chavav. We will begin on Daf Chav Hey Amid Beis, the last words of the Mishnah Sandal Dithnan. We had learned at the end of our previous shiur, the Gemara had begun to discuss the halachas of a sandal, which was discussed in our Mishnah, that if a woman has a sandal, she has Tumas Leida. And the Gemara had explained that the definition of a sandal is Rahman Slan, a child who's born crushed, looks actually like a sandal. It looks like, the Gemara gave different explanations what that exactly looks like. And what the Gemara had said was that when a sandal is born, actually what had happened is that there are two children. There's the sandal and there's the healthy child, and it's actually the healthy child that causes the unhealthy child, the sandal, to be crushed. So says the Gemara, sandal. And when we speak about a sandal, there's a Mishnah Masechta Bechayrus. The Mishnah in Masechta Bechayrus teaches us that if a woman, Rachman Slan, has a sandal, the next child that will be born will be considered a Bechor as far as Hilchis Yerusha is concerned. For as we've discussed many times in our Shiurim, that Mish Oviv, only a situation where the father grieves over the death of the child, is that child a Bechor. When somebody has a sandal, he doesn't mourn over the loss of that child. So that child, even if he was born first, is not considered as a Bechor for Hilchus Yerusha, but he is considered a Bechor as far as Pinyan HaBen. And the next child born would not be considered a Bechor as far as Hilchus Pidyon HaBen. And the Mishnah said, these halachas that I just said were Haba Achrav. And as the Mepharshim explained, if the Gemara's question, if as we are saying, with a sandal is born another child, so why when we speak about these halachas that I just described, do we say Haba Achrav? Do we have to speak about the next child born, which is the wording of the Mishnah there in the Masechta Bechayrus? Why do we have to say Haba Achrav? We should have just said Haba Imoy, the child that's born with him. For as we're explaining now, with every sandal is born a child. So the wording of Haba Achrav is what is the concern to the Gemara. Answers the Gemara. The Chiddush of that Mishnah is Leba Achrav b'chol nachla vein ba l'koyim. What the chiddush of that Mishnah is not to teach us that there is no other child together when the sandal. We're in fact speaking about the child that comes along with the sandal. And that the Mishnah is teaching us that the child that comes along with the sandal is only, if he comes second, is only considered a bechor as far as Hilchus Yerusha is concerned, but he's not considered a Bechor as far as Hilchus Pidyon HaBen, is to teach us that even though he came together with that sandal, still, since he came out second, he will not be considered a Bechor as far as Hilchus Pidyon HaBen is concerned. But we're not talking about a child that's born at another birth, we're talking about a child that came along with this birth. Ask the Gemara. Sandal that's not gabakrisis l'may hilchasa. As we know, we're learning, the halacha is that if a woman is a yoledes, she has to bring kabonis. And the Mishnah teaches us that if a woman has a sandal, the halacha is that the child that comes afterwards, that there's a chiv to bring the kabonis of yoledes. So if a sandal came by himself, we could very well understand the chiddush of that Mishnah Masechta Krisis to teach us that the sandal is considered a birth of a child that brings with it a chiv of karbonis. But if, as we are learning, with every sandal comes along a healthy child, so there's a chiv of karbon because of that healthy child. And as the Mepharshim go on to explain, I maybe will say that you have to bring two kabonis, one for the sandal and one for the healthy child, and that's what the Mishnah Masechta Krisis is teaching us. explained in Mefarshim, that's not what that Mishnah could be teaching us. Because the halacha is that if a woman has more than one child in one birth, she's only obligated to bring one carbon. So now the question of the Gemara is very understood. Why does the Mishnah have to teach us that there's a chiyuv carbon when a sandal is born, even without the sandal? Since with every sandal, as we're learning, comes along a healthy child, for the healthy child brings the chiyuv carbon yoledes, answers the Gemara. Shem teilut vlad derech doifin, v'sandal derech rechem, the ma'isa carbon a sandal. So answers the Gemara, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that the halacha is that when is there a chiyuv to bring a carbon? There's only a chiyuv to bring a carbon for yoledes if she had the baby naturally. But if she had the child through cesarean, then there is no chiyuv carbon. So the chiddush of that Mishnah is, says the Gemara, that the first child, the healthy child, was born through cesarean, so he doesn't bring a chiyuv carbon. What brings the chiyuv carbon is the sandal that was born naturally. Ask the Gemara, oh, Reb Shimon Dami Yotze Derech Doifin, Vlad Mal Yehu. Ask the Gemara, according to the opinion of Shimon, that even if a child was born through cesarean, there's a chiyuv carbon, Yoledes Michael Amemer. So it can't be the chiddush is that the healthy child was born through cesarean, because even if he were born through cesarean, there would be a chiyuv carbon. So Aruch Lener asked the obvious question. So we'll explain that Mishnah is not following the opinion of Reb Shimon, it's following the opinion of the Chachamim, where there is a Chiddush, as we just explained. So Aruch Lener says a nice teretz. He says that if we look in that Mishnah, first the Mishnah brings down the halacha that we're learning now, that if she had a cesarean, if she had a sandal, she has to bring a carbon yoledes. And then the Mishnah quotes the machlokes that we've been saying now, the machlokes of the Chachamim and Rameyer, what is the status of a child born through cesarean as far as carbon yoledes is concerned. If we'll say, says the Aruch Lener, that the first rule that we're learning now, which is the quote of the first part of the Mishnah, is only following the opinion of the Chachamim, so that Mishnah will turn out to be a machloikis, a situation of a machloikis, that the ratio represents a machloikis, and the Sefer is, the ratio will represent a stam, and this ratio will be a machloikis. Now, whenever we have a stam, v'akach machloikis, we don't follow that opinion. So, in order to avoid that we should say that Mishnah is going to be a stam, v'akach machloikis, we want to have a way of explaining the first part of the Mishnah that it should be according to everybody and avoid the Mishnah falling into the category of being a stam v'akach machloikis. So therefore the Gemara says, the way to understand there is, interesting teretz. Amar Bimia, Shem Tele Vlad B'Yosef Eskacham. First she had the first child who was the healthy child while she was still not Jewish. That child obviously does not bring a chiyuv carbon yoledes. And then she had the sandal, lachash nizgaira, after she converted, that does bring a chiyuv carbon yoledes. The chiddush is that even though he is a sandal, the ma'isi carbon a sandal, the carbon is brought because of being a sandal. Of course, the mefarshim try to understand how in this short interval from before becoming a geiris and after becoming a geiris, is it possible that she had a child? And the mefarshim explained that probably what happened was that while she was in the mikvah, that's when she went into labor. It's still somewhat difficult to understand, the mefarshim asked, because if she was in the mikvah and the first child was born, and then she went to the mikveh and the second child emerges right afterwards, why wouldn't that second child be a chatzitza from causing that the first tefillah should not be considered, the tefillah should not be considered a good tefillah because it had a chatzitza? So I saw that the Mefarshim asked this question. I saw the Aruch Lener answers that we're referring here to a situation that indeed it would not be a valid tefillah midrabbanon because of chatzitza, but it is a valid tefillah midaraisa. That's the Aruch Neref Teretz. The other mafarshim say that since that is a place which is typically concealed in the woman's body, so since it's a place that's typically concealed in the woman's body, that's why it's not considered a place where it would be a chatzitza. Continues the Gemara, that's the Ramam Rapanus Teretz. Amru Rabbanan Kamei to Rapapa. So Rabbanan repeated what we just learned to Rapapa. And he asked, when we asked the Lehani Shnuyu, are these Terutzim possible? Could the basis of these Terutzim that we just learned, that the two children don't come out together? Or yesterday, at the end of the Shir, we spoke about a situation where one child was born before the Shkia and another child was born after the Shkia. Ask the Gemara, is it possible that when there's a sandal and another child coming together, that they shouldn't be born at the exact, they shouldn't come out together? For Tanya, have we not learned, K'shen Yoitzin and Yoitzin al Kruchim, the two children are into, come out pressed together. So if they come out pressed together, the sandal and the other child are pressed together. So how could it be that the two births did not come at the exact same time? And as the Mefarshim explained, even though we learned in our Shir yesterday that the sandal could have his head turned around, that isn't a contradiction to what we're learning now, that they're together. So how could we say that the two births weren't together? Om Rapapa. So Rapapa explains what it means is, Shmamina Michrich Karchle Vlad Lasandel Palge. What happens is that the healthy child is pressed against the middle of the body of the sandal. Umashkaflai Kapiresha. That means that the sandal is, so to speak, overlaps and is longer because his upper part of the body, the head of the healthy child, is against the stomach of the sandal. So explains the Gemara. Gabi Bechairis, when we speak about the Mishnah in Masechta Bechairis, the first Mishnah we quote in today's Shir, Kigoy Shiyotu Derech Rishayim, the two children came out head first. And as we just explained, the head of the sandal comes out because it sticks out above the head of the healthy child. So the sandal comes beneath it. So first the head of the sandal comes out, and therefore, when we speak about Hilchos Bechairis, and we'll speak about this more in our perek, when we speak about Hilchos Bechairis, it's the head that counts, and therefore the sandal is the child that was born first. However, Gabakrisis, we refer to situation, Shiyotu Derech Margoseim, they were born in breach, and therefore the Vlad Kodavanofik, so the other child, the healthy child, came out first. And since the healthy child came out first, that's how we can have a situation that he came out before the mother was Megayer, and the sandal came out after the mother was Megayer. Rav Huna bar Atta, Chlif Mishmei, the Rava Omar, Afil Temim Tzumtzumim. Our Mishnah, we can explain the cases that we've been learning in today's shir, where the sandal and the healthy baby are pressed right against each other. But we have to reverse what we just said. Gam b'chayrus, when we speak about the Mishnah Masech b'chayrus, we will explain Shiyotu Derech Margoseim, that the two children came out in breach, feet first. So what happens, however, is Vlad de Isbei Chiyusa, the healthy child that has energy in it, sorrowful enough, it holds on to the womb not to come out. Sandal, which is a dead child, the less bechayusa, doesn't have any life in him. So since he doesn't have any life in him, doesn't hold on to its mother, and therefore sharp enough it. Therefore it comes out first. And that's how we can understand the Mishnah Masechta Bechayrus. The Mishnah Masechta Bechayrus refers to a situation where the sandal came out first. The reason the sandal came out first is because, as we just explained, it doesn't have the energy. On the other hand, Gabakrisis, we're referring to situation, the Mishnah Masechta Krisis refers to a situation, Shiyotu Derech Rishayim, they went out head first. So Vlad, this Bechayusa, the child that has life in it, has energy, midenofik resha, as soon as his head comes out, have a leida, is considered according to the halacha as born. Sandal, since the sandal is a dead child, so by him the halacha is not as it normally is. Normally, we know the halacha is that as soon as the head comes out, the child is considered born. Here, by a dead child, a sandal in this case, it's not enough that the head should come out, that it should be considered born. It has to come out most of its body. Adonofik rei rube. And therefore, the head of the other child, of the healthy child, comes out first. And therefore, he was born first before the geiris. And then the other child, the sandal, came out afterwards, is not considered born until most of his body emerges from its mother. And by the time most of its body emerged from the mother was already a geiris, as we explained. Says the Mishnah, Shilya Babayis. If there's an afterbirth in the house, Habayis Tamei. We assume that the house is Tamei, because according to the opinion of the Rabbanim, ain't Shilya Vloy Vlad. If there's a Shilya, there must have been a Vlad, and the Vlad is dead and brings Tumma to the house. Lo shel Shilya Vlad. Explains the Mishnah, not that the Shilya is actually a Vlad. Elish ain't Shilya bloy Vlad. It's not possible, if you have a Shilya, there must have been a Vlad who's dead and brings Tumma to the house. Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon disagrees, and Rav Shimon's opinion is that Nima ka Vlad at Shilayotza. And as we quoted the opinion of the Rishonim, it's not that there's any machloikis in how, if a shilya is if it's possible to have a shilya without a vlad. Everybody agrees that if you have a shilya, there must have been a vlad. The machloikis between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon is, how do we look at what had happened here? Tanakhama holds that if there's a shilya, there must be a vlad. Whereas Rav Shimon holds, yes, there was a vlad, but that Vlad got dissolved in the other fluids and liquids that are there in the mother, and therefore becomes bottled. Even though, as the Mordechai points out, and we've quoted this Mordechai many, many times in our shiurim, that the Mordechai says that we can't apply the concept of bittul unless first they were separate and then they become bottled. So here, how do we apply the concept a bittul if the shilya came out together with all these other fluids? Says the Mordechai that since before the shilya dissolved, it was an independent entity, that is enough that even though before it emerged from its mother's body, it already was dissolved, still it's enough to say that that we could apply the halachas of bittul. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Shilya, when we speak about a Shilya, Tchila Soi Doima L'chut Shel Erev, at the beginning it's as wide as the thread of the Erev, as we said in our previous year, when we have a weaving machine, there are horizontal threads and vertical threads, and we said that the horizontal threads are wider than the vertical threads, and that's how a Shilya is at the beginning. Ultimately, it develops into the size of a turmis. It's hollow like a trumpet. And a shulya is, minimum size of a shulya is a tefach. The Mefarshim say that even though we discussed in our previous year that the embryo, when it first develops, is much smaller, here we're speaking about a shulya that must have been from a fetus that developed into at least being 40 days old, and therefore the size of a shulya is at least a tefach. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, when we speak about a shulya, doim lekurkovin shel tanegoilim, it looks similar to the gizzards of a chicken, shadak and yotze menu, with the intestines coming out. Says the Gemara, Tanarab Oisha Zeir de Min Chavraya. Chamisha Shur Tafach Veilahim. There are five places in Halacha where there's a shear of a Tafach. And the Gemara will explain each one separately. Shilya, Shofar, Shidra, Daifin Sukkah, Ve'ezav. Shilya, Hadamar, what we've been explaining, that, as we just said, the minimum size of a shoya is at least a tefach. Shofar, what does it mean when we speak about a shofar? The Tanya, kami shofar, what is the minimum shear of a shofar? Pirish of Shimon Gamliel, kedei shechzene biyada, that you should hold it in your hand, v'yira lekan ulekan tefach. So the way most Mefarshim explain is that the tefach is an explanation of the shear shofar, and that what the Mishnah is saying is that the minimum shear of a shofar is a tefach. However, as Mefarshim point out, the problem with this pshat is that, so the Mishnah should have just said tefach. What does it say? Kedishchzena biyado v'yira lekan lekan tefach. So I saw that the Mefarshim give a number of answers to this question. One answer is that the Mishnah is actually explaining why indeed should the shear of a shofar have to be a tefach. And the Mishnah is explaining the reason that the shear of a shofar has to be a tefach is because Chazal were concerned that if somebody sees you blowing into the shofar, they're going to think that you're not, if you're blowing into your hand, and that's how the noise comes, and not from the shofar itself. To avoid that mistake, Chazal said that the minimum shear of a shofar should be kedech shechzene biyadoi, that you should hold it in your hand, v'yira lekan lekan, so everybody can see the shofar protruding on both sides of your hand, and by seeing the shofar protruding on both sides of your hand, which is the shear of a tefach, they will recognize that you're not blowing into your hand, you're blowing into the shofar. That's one pshat that I saw. Another pshat that I saw is given, as we just explained, that the reason Chazal wanted that the shofar should be the size, that it, as we just explained, so that it should be noticeable that you're blowing into the shofar, not into your hand. So it'll depend on the size of one's hand. And therefore, if somebody's going to have a very big hand, the shear, or a very small hand, the shear will change. And that's why the Mishnah says specifically this shear of shechzene, says this wording, shechzene biyad v'yir l'kan l'kan tefach. The Mishnah means to say is normally the shear will be a tefach, but sometimes it'll be bigger or smaller depending if your hand is big or small. But I did see that there's a third opinion stated by the Rabbeinu Gershom, and he says that the shear of a shofar is not as we've been explaining now, that it has to be a tefach, that actually the shear of a shofar is three tefach. And what the Mishnah we quoted here, Rav Shimon Gamliel means to say is, k'dechsene biyado, v'yir al-kan al-kan tefach, means that you have to have the size of the shofar, and plus the size of the shofar, there has to be a tefach on each side, and a tefach on each side, additional to the third tefach, in between the two sides, for a minimum shear of three tefachim for your shofar. Shidra mahi, what was meant when we spoke about the shedra? What that means, as the Gemara, the Amar Rapanach Amar Yochanan, Shidra Shalulav, the spine of the lulav, Tzorach Shiyotz Min Hadas Tefach. If we look at a lulav, so the lulav has the shedra, the spine, and then on top of the spine there are the leaves. And what this Mishnah is teaching us is that the spine of the lulav has to protrude above the hadasim by tefach, which, as the Mefarshim explained, means that the lulav has to be at least four tefachim long. Because as we know, the Gemara Masechta Sukkah teaches us that the hadasim must be at least three tefachim. And if when I was saying that the lulav, the shedra of the lulav, has to be a tefach above, 3 + 1 = 4. Doifin Sukkah, when we speak about a tefach by sukkah, what does that mean? The Tanya, Shtayim, Kilchasa, Shlishis, Afil, Tefach. The Mishnah teaches us, the Braisa teaches us, what are the minimum, how the amount of walls you need to have for a sukkah. The Mishnah says, at least according to this opinion, two walls that are 7 tefachim, And the third wall is even a tefach. There is another opinion that says, as we learned in Masechtas Sukkah, that you have to have three walls that are a minimum of Zayin Tfachim, and the fourth wall are a tefach. The Al-Sheikh explains, what is Pshat? He says there are three things that we need to have. Chaya b'nei u'mezayni. Life, gezunt, b'nai is children, naches, and mezayni panasa. And what the lesson of the Sukkah is, that when it comes to life, and when it comes to children, we want to have full walls. Very full walls. When we speak about mezayinus, when it comes to money, whatever Hashem gives us, we need to be satisfied with. Ezoif, when the fifth thing mentioned was the Ezoif, what does that mean? The Tanar Chia, Ezoif Tefach. The Torah speaks about using an Ezoif in a number of situations. One is regarding the Taharas HaMetzairah, that when the Metzairah becomes Tar, the Kohen has to bring two birds, and one of them is slaughtered on top of Mayim Chayim, which is in a Kli Cheres, and then we take Eitz Erez and a bunch of Azov grass and a sheet to las and the live bird, and we all dip them into the blood and water mixture, and we spritz it on the Metzairah. The Torah speaks about Ezoiv regarding the avoid of the Paraduma, that we have to sprinkle the Paraduma mixture of ash and water, and also use Eitz Ezoiv. And this teaches us Rav Chiya that the Eitz Ezoiv has to be at least a tefach. Says the Gemara, commenting on these five cases that we just discussed. Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorsh Ishil Kfa Tamrata, Tlas Masnisen. Three of the cases that we just learned are Brises, Vetati Shmatza, and two are the statement of a Meroyim, that, and we break down this list where the halach is that you have to have a tefach. What are the two that are? So we know that the case that Rabbi Yochanan said about the Lulav is a Moira, but that's only one case. How do we have two? Tarta, how do we have two cases that are stated by Meroim? How does he say that only two cases were stated by Meroim? Chabihi, there's only one case, the case that Rabbi Yochanan said regarding the Lulav. Answers the Gemara, Amra Baya, Eima Amra B'chiyah Ezef Tefach. Our Gemara had the Girsa of Tani Rav Chiya. The Rav Chiya quoted a Braisa. But actually, the right Girsa, says the Gemara, is Amra Rav Chiya. And this was what Rav Chiya said as an Amoira. And as the Mefarshim explained, and as we finish Shas, we should explain this. There are Tanoim and Amoroim. Tanoim, as the word Tana represent, means, Vishinantam, would be the one that said what is considered Torah Shabbat. Amoroim, was what the Amoroim say is Shmatza, is to explain what the Tanoim said. Rav Chiya explained the Mefarshim, was from the last of the Tanoim and the first of Meroim. So when it says Tani Rav Chiya, Rav Chiya was actually saying a Braisa. But when it says Om Rav Chiya, it comes later in life, after Rebbe closed the Tekufa of Tanoim, and it began the Tekufa of the Meroim, and Rav Chiya at that point was an Amoira, and what he says has the status of what an Amoira says. Ask the Gemara, the Suleka, we've listed that there are five cases of a tefach. Ask them, are that only cases? For Ikka, tefach al tefach, arum tefach. There we're learning in the Braisa regarding Hilchas Tumma. And the halacha is that if there is Tumma in the house, so if there's an overhang, if there's a roof over the Tumma, which is a tefach by a tefach, and there's a space between the tumma, and there's a space between the mace that's causing the tumma and the roof and the oil over him, and it's meruba and it's square. And as the Mefarshim explained, what the Gemara, what the Braisa there means by saying meruba is to say that let's say you don't have a tefach al tefach, but the length, you have, it's long and narrow, or it's wide and short, it will not be considered a tefach. It's only considered a tefach if it's exact, if you least have the dimensions of a tefach al a tefach. The loch is maybe as a tuma, then you could have tuma v'choytz v'fnei tuma. If you have what we just described, so then the tuma is contained within that oil, but the tuma spreads throughout that entire oil. If you won't have a tefach in between the mace and the roof, so the halacha is that the tuma bekas for oil, the tuma goes up all the way till the heaven, but it doesn't spread to the side. But what we see from here is that we have again a situation where the shear is a tefach. Answers the Gemara. What we've been learning is tefach kamin. We're speaking about a tefach. Tefach a tefach lo kamin. Here the dimensions that we just explained were a tefach by a tefach. That's not the list that we're discussing now. Ask the Gemara, but there's another case. Vika. Evan hayoytze min a tanur. If there's a stone protruding from a tanur, which is the size of a tefach, umin akira, or from a kira. And as the Gemara Masechta, the Shabbos explained, a tanner is where one pot was held, a kira is where two pots were held, but by kira the shear is shalosh etzbos, they're considered a chibur, they're considered connected to the actual utensil, and if the utensil becomes tamei, then the yad of the utensil is tamei as well. And the Mefarshim explain why is there a larger shear by a tanner than by a kira. So the Mefarshim explain, because a tanner, they typically transported the tanner with the food in it. So it was heavier. So they needed a bigger handle than by a kira. But here we see that the shear is a tefach. So why wasn't it mentioned? Answers the Gemara. Ki kaminen heche batzer mitefach lohava. We're only speaking in cases where less than a tefach is meaningless. Avo. Let's think about this case. The chiddush of that case is that even if you have a handle that is as large as a tefach, it's still considered a handle. Certainly, if the handle is smaller than a tefach, it's certainly considered a handle. Aval hachakoshkein, the botzer mitefach ya tanerhu. And therefore, it doesn't fit into the list that we're discussing. Ask the Gemara Ikka. But yes, there's another case that it should have been mentioned. Tanuri bonus. These were small ovens that were used by young girls as toys. Tanuri bonus, tefach. If they are bigger tefach, they become susceptible to be makabel tuma. The tanya, tanner. When we speak about a regular oven, tchilose arba. It has to be four tefachim long, high, in order that it should be able to be makabel tuma. V'shiarif arba, an earthenware oven, if it was broken, if it at least has the shear of four tefachim, then it's still makabel tuma. Divrei Rameya. That is the opinion of Rameya. The Chamayim, b'medvar mamurim, when was this halacha said that you have to have at least four tefachim in order that it should be mekabel tuma begadol? That's when we speak about a large oven. Avol bekatan, when we speak about a small oven. Tchilosoi kalshu mishtegma melachtoi. Even if its shear is any amount, and we'll speak about what any amount means in a moment, if it's complete, you have a full oven, it's mekabel tuma. V'shiurav, and to be if you started with that shear, as long as roiv of the oven remains, the halacha is that it's still mekabel tuma. The kama kol shu, and explaining that kol shu, the Gemara says, how much is it? Amar Yanai, tefach. Shekein oisin tanuri bonis tefach. So we see here that the minimum shear is a tefach. So why isn't it included in the list that we're discussing? Answers the Gemara, the plukta lo kamaru. We're trying to avoid situations that are the subject of a machlokes. And here, as we just learned, the shiurim of an oven are a subject of machlokes or mei chachamim, and therefore it's not included in the list. So as the mefarshim, when we spoke earlier about the sukkah, we said that there was a machlokes there as well. Do you have to have two whole walls and the third wall a tafach, or do you have to have three whole walls and the fourth wall a tafach? So it too is the subject of a machlokes. And now we're saying that the list that we're learning is avoiding cases that are open to a machlokes. Answer the mefarshim, that Tosfos answers, that there may be a machlokes how many whole walls you have to have. But everybody agrees that the last wall is sufficient just to be the size of a tefach. And therefore, as far as that halach is concerned, there is no machlokes, and it could still remain in the list. Says the Gemara, hash the dosis lachi, now that we have said that we're avoiding anything that represents a machlokes, so the question that the Gemara just asked on the bottom of Amud Aleph regarding the oven handle also could be answered that way. Because Hanami Pluktahi, that is also the subject of a machlokes, the Tani Sefer, because the Sefer of that Mishnah says, Amar Yehuda, Lo Amar Tefach, the only time they said that a handle, even if it's as large as a Tefach, is still considered a handle, that if the oven becomes Tamei, so too is the halacha of the handle, Elementatana El Kaisel. If the handle is between the oven and the wall, but if the handle is going into the room, then there's no need to make it shorter. It's still considered a tefach. Only the handle next to the wall has these restrictions. So continues the Gemara, but there's another case of a tefach. V'ikim is geres tefach. There was molding around the shulchan, which was the size of a tefach. Answered the Gemara, but the ksivan lekamari. Something that is mentioned explicitly in the Torah, where the Torah explicitly says that the molding around the shulchan was a tefach, doesn't need to be mentioned in the list. Ask the Gemara, v'ikke kapyrus tefach, the cover of the oren, the kapyrus, was a tefach thick, so why isn't it included in the list? Answers the Gemara, b'kachm le'kamari. And as the Ritva says, now the Gemara could have given this teretz to the shulchan as well, that we're not speaking about situations of kachin. But the Ritva says that this is very common throughout Shas, that the Gemara says one teretz, and then the Gemara gives another teretz that could have been used to answer one of the other questions as well. Ask the Gemara, v'ikadai l'kairish yirchav tefach. We learned the Masechta Erevin, that the halach is that a mavui, which chatzair is open to, so it has three walls, and the fourth wall opens to Rishus HaRabim. So actually, midaraisa, that mavui is a full-fledged Rishus HaYochid. However, Chazal said that one should not be allowed to carry in that mavui unless we make a heker at the entrance of the mavui. And the way a heker is made is either with lechi, we put poles up, we put vertical poles up by the opening of the mavui, or we put a kaira, a cross beam, across the entrance of the mavui. And the Mishnah in Masechta Erevin teaches us that that cross beam could be a tefach wide and it'll be considered an adequate kaira. Answers the Gemara, but the Rabbanan Lekamari. We're not speaking about cases that are Midrabbanan. And as the Aruch Lener explains, even though we explained earlier that the din of the Shedra of a Lulav could well be is a din Midrabbanan, because the Tosfos Rit teaches us that Midaraisa, a Lulav, is kosher as soon as it's three tefachim high. So therefore, when we spoke about the Shedra protruding atop of the Hadassim by Tefach, it must be that was only a din de Rabbanon. Still, explains the Aruch Lener, the halacha of Lulav is a din de Raisa. This one detail about the minimal height of the lulav, about the shedra protruding atop of the adasin, that may be din of the rabbonim. But when we speak about the mavi, the entire concept of what we're speaking about is only a rabbonim. And therefore, says the Gemara, what is spoken in our list about the ksidim, things, halachas that are based midaraisa. However, for lemefash shirayu, the Torah didn't give us the shear, and this braisa listed that by these cases, the shear is a tefach. Says the Gemara. Yosef Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Matta kamed Rav Kahana for Yosef v'komar. Amar Yehuda Merav, kol shloish yomam rishonim, the first 3 days after childbirth, toilan is a shilya bevlad. We assume that any shilya that comes out is connected to that child that was born. Amalei, to which Rav Kahana said to Rav Yitzchak, umi amar Rav hachi, did Rav actually say this? From a Rav, ain't a Vlad Misachav Chaveroi Klum, that one child is not delayed after the birth of the other child, even by the slightest amount. So how can we say that after 3 days, we're concerned that the afterbirth belongs to another child? We have no reason to be concerned about another child. The other child should have come out immediately. Ishtik, Rav Yitzchak was quiet. Amle, so Rav Kahana said to him, Dilma kambenefel kamben kayoma. When did Rav say that it's possible for one child to be born 3 days after the other? It's only when the first child was a nefel. Well, when Rav said that one child is born immediately after the other, is when the first child was a normal, healthy child. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak said to Rav Kahana, Ad Amrit L'shmatzei the Rav, are you explaining Rav by yourself? Beferish Amar Rav Hachi, this is explicitly what Rav said. Hepila Nefel, if a woman had a Nefel, V'achakach Hepila Shilya, and then the afterbirth comes out. So if it's Kol Shlosh Yomim, if the Shilya came out within 3 days after the Nefel, Toilin Sashilya Bavlad, Mekam Ve'elech, but if it was after 3 days, and that the child that was born was Rachman Tzlon HaNefel, Choshin Levlad Acher, we need to be concerned that there was another child, and this is the Shilya of that other child. However, Yolda, if she had a healthy child, Vachkach Apil Shilya, and then she discharges a Shilya, I feel mekanda sorry yomim, even if it's 10 days later, en chashon vlad acher, we attribute the shilya to that healthy child that was born. Says the Gemara, Shmuel and Talmidei the Rav, Rav Yehuda Aviyasri. Shmuel and Talmidei the Rav and Rav Yehuda was sitting. Cholav ozel Rav Yosef b'rei de Menashe medvil lapayu bol v'osi. He walked by them and was walking very quickly. Amar. So Shmuel said to the others, "Asim lan gaver, the reminan la begila de chitza umamri mitcha." There's a person walking by here that we would ask him a question, as small as just the little stubble that is around wheat, he would be refuted. Adahachi asi asa. So as they're talking, Rabbi Yosi approached. Amalei Shmuel, my Amar Rabbi Shilya. So Shmuel asked Rabbi Yosef, what did Rav say regarding Shilya? Amalei, Hach Amar Rav. So he said, this is what Rav said, Ein Tanon to Shilya, El B'Dov Shel Kayoma. We only could say that the Shilya came from the child if the child was a healthy child. In other words, Rabbi Yosef is now limiting Rav's ruling even further. He only said that we could attribute the Shilya to a Nefel for the first 3 days. If it were a Nefel, that if it were a full-term baby, it could have survived. However, if the fetus wasn't developed at all, then we don't even give it the 3-day period. Shalina Shmuel Chol Tamidei the Rav,
Barmalei Hachi. Shmuel asked all of the Talmidim of Rav whether Rav Yosef's report of what he said Rav said was accurate, and they all agreed. Chada Chazi L'Rav Yehuda Bisha. So then he was upset as Rav Yehuda. Why was he upset as Rav Yehuda? So I saw two pshatim. One pshat is because when Rav Yehuda reported what Rav said, he didn't report it accurately. He didn't give over this detail. Another pshat is that Rav Yehuda was also, when Shmuel was speaking disparagingly about Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda didn't say anything. Yet here we see that Rav Yosef was a great Talmud Chacham, and therefore Shmuel was upset. He's a great Talmud Chacham. Why did you let me speak disparagingly about him? Says the Gemara. Barminer asked the Gemara. Barminer Rav Yosef Hashom Rebbe. Hamapelas Tavos Oyrev Veshilya Imai. If a woman discharges something that looks like a raven, and with that she also discharged a shilya, what is the halacha? Amalei, to which Rebbe replied, Ein toilen ela bedover sheyesh b'min shilya. We only attribute the shilya when what was born normally comes with a shilya. Ravens, birds, normally don't come with birds. So he continued to ask, Shura ba mahu. What happens if the shilya is attached to the dismus oirif? Amalei, davish enish alta. You're asking something that can never be. Esvei, in other words, he's saying it's impossible for a mother to issue something that looks like an oirif with a shilya attached to it. Ask the Gemara. It says in a brisa, Hamapels mepin behem mechayv oif v'shilya imoim. So the brisa paskins. If the shilya is attached, we need not be concerned that there's another child here. But if the shilya is not attached, we need to be concerned that there's another child. And therefore, I treat this woman, I treat her all of the chumras. We have to be concerned that there was a second child. And even though the first one looks like a male, we have to be concerned that the second child was a female, and therefore she's not tummy just for 7 days. She's tummy for 14 days, like when a girl is born. On the other hand, we need to be concerned that there was only boys, and she's only tar for 33 days, not for 66 days. Sheni Oimer, Shemin Nemuach Shvir Shel Shilya. We need to be concerned that maybe in this Shilya there was a Shvir, a different fetus that we don't see. The Nemuach Shilya Shel Shvir that got dissolved. But what do we see from here? That it's possible for an afterbirth to be attached to a fetus that looks like a bird. So the Gemara, to Yufta, indeed, Rebbe's opinion has been refuted. Interesting to note that the Paiskim discuss what do we do with a shilya that comes out after a woman has a baby. It seems that the Paiskim say that a shilya need not be buried, although I did see that the Michas Yitzchak quotes certain achroinim that say that a shilya should be buried, but the Paiskim do say that a shilya certainly should not be mistreated. It's also b'hanah, one shouldn't use it for any other improper purposes, and it should be disposed of in a respectful way.